This was a unique situation. I think clearly, as you see where he was transacted to, there's a connection there. We did what we needed to do from our perspective. I think as the year went on, for me, I could clearly see that Brady was a bit of a different player from the year before. So probably not overly surprised at that point. Did I wish it was different and we could find a way to move forward? Of course. I mean, you know, he's a good player, but that wasn't the case and we moved on.
Steve Staios.
We've been there.
Apparently is the GM of the Ottawa Senators. And they remain handily above the Sabres in the cup odds. Huh. Even though they did take a dip, giving Brady Tkachuk away for draft picks.
It's a lot of draft picks, but man, that is not... It's hard to feel any kind of good about that. I mean, they've been a playoff team 2 years in a row. Sure, they didn't get to 100 points or 109 like the Sabres or Montreal or even Boston, but still, like, they're building toward something, and that's the captain. And it's three it's a nice haul of stuff, but none of it, you know, Staios, I think, goes on in at some point today in talking about being forced to make this trade. Like, we'll see, you know, they can turn those picks into something immediate, too. Like, those are good assets that maybe they can move.
Are they in each of the next three seasons?
No, I believe 9 and 25. There's two that are this year, and then
that's better.
It's after, I think.
That's better.
I think because Florida traded for 25 earlier in the day. They sent Samsakevich to, I forget where, but they made a trade earlier in the day that got them one of the picks that they sent to Ottawa. But man, it just, you know, you think you're building towards something. This is the fear, you know, you live with. This is us with Jack Eichel from the minute he got here. For some people, they go, well, just wait until he wants to leave. And, you know, eventually he did. And this thing with Tkachuk felt like a ticking time bomb almost from the minute his brother forced a trade out of Calgary to Florida.
Yep.
And then I think, like Staios even says there, I think just the appetite for the fan base and just Canada in general, I think it's hard on American players that are in Canada after the Olympics. So you've got this sort of built-in friction now that you just, I think, want to alleviate. And so there you are.
So it's not frictionless, apparently, right. The situation.
Right. Was not frictionless.
Hmm.
So I think, you know, on one hand, you can easily look at Florida and go, oh my gosh, they're building a super team, you know, because they have the Tkachuk brothers now. And their forward lines do look intimidating. I think Florida was going to be back anyways. I think overall, this is a net positive if you're a Sabres fan, because I think it really damages Ottawa. And I don't know maybe they can, on the fly here, turn some of this stuff that they got back in assets into something to help them immediately, or maybe they can have a great summer spending Brady Tkachuk's money on someone else. But I think right now, if they can't pull a whale into the boat, they've been weakened, and they were, to me, it just eliminates, I think, for now, a team that I don't think you got to really worry about them right now. And I think Florida, with or without Brady Tkachuk, to me, was going to be a team that was going to be back in, you know, living in the area that the Sabres and Montreal and Tampa were living in all season, this past season.
Well, I'm sure that USA-Canada dynamic can be correct, you know, depending on the guy, whether that's Brady Tkachuk or Connor Hellebuyck or someone else.
Right.
They're also very small markets. They're not in Toronto or Vancouver. They're in Winnipeg and Ottawa. And that can be enough, and that's what we can relate to. I mean, right. Tage Thompson and Alex Tuch are Americans, but they're also in a small market, and Jack Eichel is American, and he wanted to go, and he did. Like, the players have a lot of power. They don't have all of it. And I don't know. Like, this one, I like the sex appeal of three firsts, at least. I'd like to get a Peyton Krebs back or somebody in a trade like this, where I have somebody
right.
That's maybe been good in the minor leagues that I can think about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's three firsts. It feels like the kind of trade to me where if Tkachuk has so much control in the situation that he's going to, like, Florida, okay? Got it? I'm going to hang up and listen. Florida. And so here's the Ottawa management, and we're kind of up against a wall here. What will you give us? Or probably I like this idea more from the other side, from Florida. What do you want? This feels like a trade where Florida says, what do you want? And Ottawa's like, three firsts and a second. And Florida's like, done. I mentioned the name Jacob Sanderson a lot from ADP Chasing. We do a podcast on Tuesday nights on fantasy football, and he is a Celtics fan. And he's tweeting a lot about Giannis and Jaylen Brown, all of that. And Jacob's like, it just feels like the Celtics are sort of nitpicking. And I'm like, just go be Florida. What do you want? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let them name your price. And then maybe they'll do it. And then you can be done. Unless it's insane. Is three firsts insane? No. I mean, it's the Rams.
Right. It's two this year, by the way. 9-25. The other one is conditional and not until 2029.
Oh, I can't see that far ahead.
And the second round pick is 2027.
Okay. Still. What do you want? Sounds like two firsts then, and a second, and then something in the distant future.
Yeah.
During the next World Cup or something.
Like three drafts from now.
Yeah,
four,
fine.
Four, even.
Whatever. Maybe Florida. Four. Maybe Florida will be bad then. They'll be old.
Yeah.
And Ottawa wins on that pick.
Well, perhaps. I wonder what the conditional might be, that if it's lottery protected or some nonsense like that. So that maybe whatever. I don't know what the conditions are, but it's just all, you know, it's two right away and then nothing for four more years, which is maybe a little tougher.
Three.
Four more drafts.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right.
Right.
Well, you know, when we talked about the Rams, or when we all talk about the Rams and their draft pick stuff, I think they get a lot of love for it. I love my draft picks. And I could be Ottawa here,
yeah,
and feel like I'm not going to keep the player because I know what this is, and you know, in private, I know what he's saying, and I know that I don't have a lot of leverage here.
Yeah.
So I'll take three firsts and then do the next thing.
I'll tell you what this does for I have mostly, as it turned out this year, you know, I think for a few years I was mostly, I would describe myself as admiring, if not flat out liking, the Florida Panthers. Like the build of their team, I liked how they played. I loved how they won the President's Trophy and then traded their leading scorer. Like that was the start of all this. They had a great year, got knocked out, and went, yeah, this isn't going to do it. And they pivoted, which is a very hard thing to do when you're already, you know, 110-point team or whatever they were when they won the President's Trophy. It's like, you got my admiration and respect for doing that, and how they play, and Reinhardt. Like, I mostly have liked them. This feels just a little too much like LeBron and Wade and Bosh, and like it's a tipping point for me where Florida, I'm done sort of hat tipping them. Like, oh, this yes. is an advantage they have because they were able to pull off the first Tkachuk trade, and now like they're in the driver's seat to get his brother. And I don't know, like, I feel like now the rest of the league has got one arm tied behind their back, and I'm no longer really respecting you, Florida. Like, I feel like whatever advantage, the taxes, what, it just feels a little greasy to me. Mm-hmm. So
that's Vegas too.
Yeah. I think I'm done sort of, you know, like the expiration date has been reached on my admiration of Florida.
Admiration has hit its expiration.
They are going to be insufferable with those two guys there. That might be still a lot of fun to watch in a certain way, but like I'm going to have a very hard time, you know, not being annoyed by it, I think, mostly. So
this is me with most things.
Yeah. So that for me, that's, and I wonder if, like, you know, how many like-minded hockey fans there would be, sort of slowly nodding at the Florida Panthers, respecting what they're doing, and now it just feels a little like, you know, I don't know, it just feels gluttony a little bit. Like, I think they were already going to be great again. And
look,
now, I don't know.
This is our lives, though. We're never one of these teams. We're never going to be one of these teams. Even the Bills.
Right.
I mean, as good as Allen is, as good as they've been, they've done some of it, but they're not going to be able to lord over the NFL.
Right. Von Miller never did lure DeAndre Hopkins or Odell Beckham Jr. here.
No.
That never happened.
And it was never surprising that that didn't happen.
Right.
That's just what it's always been.
Yeah.
You can draft, you can hit the jackpot at quarterback and, you know, do the best you can after that.
One thought I did have when this happened, you know, yesterday afternoon or evening when we learned about this Brady Tkachuk to Florida trade was, you know, Kalibuk may want to leave Winnipeg. Larkin wants to leave Detroit. Not that Detroit's a Canadian market. But like we've got this sort of Team USA. There's already rumblings about Werenski in Columbus. Is he going to sign an extension there? Are they going to try to get out ahead of it? Maybe that waits until next offseason or something. But there'll be drama there. One thought I had was, all right, what I need here is Tage Thompson to get on the phone with Dylan Larkin. Just be like, dude. Do you see what these guys are doing in Florida? All right, look, they don't have room for you. Vegas probably doesn't have room. Come to Buffalo, and we're building a Guardians of the Galaxy here, and you're on my team, okay? I don't know if that's realistic or not, but it was one thought I had. Like, go recruit somebody to, you know, waive their no trade to come on over here and help you beat them.
Well, it's a exciting idea. Does Thompson strike you in the slightest as having that personality? Not me. I just any sort of a commanding presence in any does not seem like it.
Right.
So
they were line mates. He
will shoot. So he will shoot. Yeah. He doesn't always pass. He's a shooter, but I don't know. That's probably not fair. Yeah, I mean that's a tough sell though.
Sure, so
Buffalo's a tough sell, and so is Ottawa. And that's just never going to not be true.
Right.
803-0550. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
Get Paul Hamilton's thoughts on the big trade in the division. Brady Tkachuk from the Ottawa Senators to the Florida Panthers for 3 first-round picks, 2 this year, including the 9th overall pick. And we'll chat about with Paul and get your thoughts in if you want to join us as well. Jeremy and Joe. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, Paul. We're bigger conversations today. We've had some about, you know, the Tkachuk trade itself, some about the landscape of the NHL, and I feel like that is a big part of it. And like I said to Joe and the guys here this morning, my first reaction was like, I hope Yarmo is up to the moment here because it feels like it's more than just an arms race, but you kind of got to realize what the landscape is, right? Like you're competing in the NHL with these other teams. And if you've got these teams that have the ability like Florida and Vegas and Carolina to kind of load up, given some strengths that other teams don't have, or some assets that they don't have, whether it's palm trees or no taxes, like it or not, you're swimming in those waters. And I'm just kind of that's how I'm thinking about it today. I wonder how you're feeling about it.
Yeah, well, in Florida's case, they have good players, so everybody wants to play there because they know they're a contender. And with the salary cap going up, they used, you know, they had signed all their own and gotten a lot of their own back. But now that there was more money to be had, they decided to, you know, spend it on another Tkachuk. And, you know, and that's the thing, too. You know, Yarmo's in the same situation with Bo Byram, except Byram only has 1 year left where Brady had 2, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but he's, you know, in a similar situation where he's got Byram, who was not likely to sign here and basically has told them so. And, you know, it's you got a year to figure it out. You know, what do you want to do? Do you want to run it back and just use him as a rental? Do you want to, you know, see what you can get for him? You know, this one's more similar to Reinhart, where Reinhart told Kevin Adams that he wouldn't be re-signing and gave him a year. And Kevin Adams traded him that offseason. And was able to get Devin Levi and Yuri Kulik out of the deal. So, you know, a lot of players now are basically using their option to get out of places and to get places that they want to be in. And it's more getting to places that they want to be in, I think. This one was, you know, the relationship deteriorated. It wasn't necessarily that he was on Team USA and won the gold medal over Canada. It was the visit to the White House and him being front and center with Trump, who is about as hated could be in the country of Canada. And when he was introduced after the gold medal in his own arena in Ottawa, there was, you know, some boos there. And he's been, you know, getting it from people when he's out and about and that type of thing. And he didn't, you know, he didn't want to be a part of that anymore. He that did not make him feel at home anymore. And I think that probably there were, I'm sure, many reasons, but that was a big reason why he decided that he wanted out of Ottawa.
Do you feel like, Paul, that Ottawa should be criticized, the GM there, for, I guess, caving this easily on that? Like, Yzerman right now, it sounds like, well, Larkin wants out. He gave him three teams. And that Yzerman's basically told him, you got to give me more teams or you're not getting traded. And I don't know, it kind of feels like Ottawa just said, all right, you want to leave? Sure. That's where you want to go? Sure thing. Like, you're right. Like, I think the Sabres might be a little different. If you're in a spot where a player's got 1 year left, maybe it's really hard to play hardball. But when the guy's got two, I don't know, it feels like you – if that were my team, I would have wanted them, I think, to maybe try a little harder to have, like, a real market for him.
Yeah, but he had, you know, this is where he wanted to go. So he was going to probably turn down most other destinations. So he didn't give Ottawa much to work with, and he is going to leave. So you're not really caving in. You're realizing the inevitable. It didn't sound like there was any talking him out of it. And once he became unrestricted, you had no power. You have no leverage at all. I mean, then he goes. So the thing is, how much better a deal can you get if you wait, or do you get a worse deal if you wait? Because, you know, the longer it takes, and if it's only one or maybe two teams or whatever that he's willing to go to, it really shrinks the – and I think Yarmo's a little bit into this situation too, that it sounds like Byram's not going to sign a contract with anybody. He's going to – he wants to – his agent, and he wants to go to free agency. So that makes a trade a lot harder if that indeed is it, unless you can find a place where he is a number one defenseman and does want to go, and you can make a decent trade with that team where, you know, he can, you know, sign a new contract and be in his new place. But if short of that, you know, Yarmo's going to have a difficult time too.
Paul Hamilton with us on the Wester Hotline. Paul, Florida was injured a lot of last year. They had a down season. That's why they had a top 10 pick to send in this deal. When you look at what they've got now, adding Brady Tkachuk, would you expect they're just going to be right back kind of where they were, what they were thought of before, which is that's the top team you got to beat if you make the playoffs and run into them in the Eastern Conference playoffs?
No, because they don't have a goalie.
They literally don't have one.
They do not have a goalie. They both are unrestricted free agents. So that's a big question mark. Who's going to be in goal? I mean, you can have all these great players in front of the goalie, but if the goalie's not up to it, you're probably not going anywhere. So that's the thing. It's very difficult to tell I mean, they've got some great players up front, and, you know, they got some on the skating end, and that side of the coin, they got some great players. And, yes, if they get a competent goaltender, they are going to be right there again. You know, they've reloaded and ready to roll, and, you know, don't have the injuries they had last year. So that's almost like making trades. You get Barkov back, you get a healthy Matthew.
Marshawn and Tkachuk both missed time.
Yeah,
and there were
right,
others.
Right. Yeah. So you get them healthy. So, but the goaltending thing right now is a mess. So, you know, they got $7 million left on their cap. You know, where are they going with the goaltender?
Right. And Friedman said over the weekend he thinks it's unlikely that Bobrovsky is back there. So probably somebody new. But I thought this morning after they made that trade, Paul, that them being connected to Hellebuck as much as they were probably – I don't know how they would be able to do that now after trading for Tkachuk. It feels like it should be impossible. Maybe it's not, but
I guess you never say never, but
right. Like maybe if they want to trade Lundell or something, but they're kind of, you know, they don't have a first-round pick that they can trade, I think, now until 2031. So It should be tougher for them to get, like, Hellebuck or somebody like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because to get Hellebuck, you're probably going to need a first-round pick or two or three in addition to some other things. So, yeah. But, again, these days, you never say never. You think – just when you think a team can't pull off something like that, next thing you know, they pull it off.
Paul Hamilton joining us on the Western Hotline. The draft is this week, Paul. Friday, right? We'll be at KeyBank Center to cover the draft. The Sabres have the 20th pick. And, of course, like we've seen, it's been a slow drip here this offseason, almost like a move a day. So I'd imagine that, you know, leading up to Friday's draft, we could see more movement. You know, Zach Benson, Paul, where do you land on how obvious this is for the Sabres? And Kevin Weeks reported they're getting close on a 7-year, $7 million deal, roughly, like the Doan package. And there's a report out there about an offer sheet for Benson. And then Bulldog on the weekend, I listened on Friday, talk about, like, this might be the most easy and popular move in Sabres history when they extend him. What do you think the right number is? Because he's kind of like, in our hearts, untouchable. But, of course, if a team did come in with an offer sheet of $13 million, I don't think they would. I don't know what they would do. So, what do you feel like is appropriate for Benson whenever that news does come down?
Yeah, and until I start seeing more offer sheets, I don't get too wrapped up in them. We should see more, but we don't. The threat's always there, and 99.9% of the time, the threat never happens. But yeah, the threat is always there, and. And the thing is, with his offense, it started to come in the last 30 games or so of the regular season. It definitely started to come in the playoffs. So there's been an improvement there. And I've always felt that he can score goals. I mean, he scored goals at every level that he's played in. And, he started in the NHL at 18, and he wasn't ready to score goals in the NHL at 18. Do I think he's a 35-goal scorer? No, I doubt that. But, I think you can get him into 20-ish, 25-ish, somewhere in there. I think he has that in him. And he started scoring some big goals for them, some, quote, goal scorer goals. So it looks like the offense, same thing when they acquired Doan. You know, he didn't have any track record of scoring in the NHL, Kevin Adams, when he was acquired, said they feel he has a very good upside. He was right. First year in Buffalo, he had 25. So, there was a good upside there. So, it's one of those things where you kind of got to get used to the NHL and used to everything. And I still think there's an offensive upside to Benson.
Mm-hmm. Do you see him, Paul, going forward on, I don't even want to say a higher line, but his role kind of being increased? Last year, he went up in ice time, but he was still under 16 minutes a night. And I wonder if the playoffs were kind of a sign of this. Like, he played over 20 minutes in each of the final three games against Montreal. Like, regular season, he was between 15 and 16. And then by the playoffs, it's like, this guy's on the ice all the time. That could be another reason, right? Like, the numbers go up is he's just playing more. And if Tuck's gone, I mean, that's minutes for wingers that are going to become available.
Yeah, he started playing more on the penalty kill. He got more power play time.
Top line a little bit here and there.
What's that?
Top line a little bit here and there, but mostly stuck with Doan throughout the playoffs.
Well, he was all over. That's the thing that's nice when you're a coach. You plug him in anywhere. I mean, wherever you need him, he can play, and he fits right in. I mean, it's not like it takes a while for him to gel with a line. You put him somewhere, and he fits right in immediately. A little bit like Krebs. He's got maybe two guys like that in his lineup that he can do that with. And that's what he did with Benson. There were times Benson was, out there playing with Malenstein. And then there were times he was out there playing with Thompson. It just wherever they needed him, that's where they slotted him. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's another reason, being the jack of all trades is another reason why the money doesn't seem out of line to me or crazy or anything like that. Just because he can do so much for you, and the lineup is so valuable for you where he puts you in the lineup. And the one minus he got rid of last year, which was good. 2 years ago, he took really dumb penalties. He crossed the line. And he kept putting them shorthanded and hurting them. And Lindy sat him down and says, look, it, I like that you go to the line, but you got to realize where the line is. And you got to stop hurting us with dumb penalties and you know, winding up putting us shorthanded. And he did that. I mean, most of the time he would draw penalties. You know, the other team was taking penalties on him, or at least he would take somebody with him. But if you think about it, it was rare that he took a really stupid penalty in the middle of those scrums and everything. And I think he really worked to improve that where he wasn't hurting the team anymore.
Yeah, he drew 11 penalties in the playoffs, by the way, according to NHL.com. Yeah. So he was definitely doing that too. Now that we go ahead, Paul, into the, I mean, we're not far away from free agency too. If they do trade Byram, like we feel like they could very well in the next little bit, they need a top four defenseman, right? Like there's nobody. Maybe you would project long term. They have guys that could be that, but for this season, like there's nobody. I even feel like I'd want to begin to make an argument for going into the top four. Like wouldn't they have to? They would have to make an acquisition somewhere.
They would. They need something to get them to either Mertke or Kleber. And is that a year? And I'm saying that with a question mark. I mean, I fully believe one or both of them are a top four type of a defenseman. You know, where are they in their development? Mertke did get some time in Rochester last year in addition to playing in junior. Didn't look out of place. Didn't look out of place in the preseason. There were folks who are wondering if he's going to make the team, you know, with the way he played in preseason. So I think if they've got a couple of really good, young, big right-handed shooting defensemen that they're very high on, that are projecting to be top four. So where are they in their growth? How far away are they? Do you just have to bridge a year before maybe you see one of them? Is Mertke good enough to make the team next year? You know, how much has he improved, you know, playing in Seattle or and then playing in Rochester? You know, they got a chance to see him to play in Rochester, so they have an idea. So that's really what's in play here is – what is the bridge that can get you to the guys that you know are going to be in your top four for years to come?
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Railax, we got this. Paul, we'll talk later in the week as we get presumably some extensions, maybe some more reports, and a draft coming your way on Friday as well.
And quickly, this helps what you've been saying all along. You know, when Thomas, well, St. Louis is saying they're not going to trade him.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, right. Right. How many times were Kachuk,
really?
Kachuk trade rumors shut down?
Not getting traded.
He would shut them down.
He would, yep.
Yeah.
So that's all I got to say to that. Yep. Really?
Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
Paul Hamilton. Couple of rumors / reports in the last couple of minutes. Bruce Garriott in Ottawa led to believe Steve Staios is actively shopping numbers 9 and 25 before the draft. Lots of interest. And then Evan Reinhart's Fox Sports scout analyst and two guys in Hockey Talk expect Vegas to move out a large salary to bring in another star in the next 3 to 10 days. They're going to get Larkin, right? Vegas is just going to go get Dylan
Larkin. They're going to get Larkin. Who are they
moving out?
Hurdle, $6.75 million.
He can still play.
Barbashev at 5, Carlson at 5.9. They're not moving Stone, 9.5. Yeah. That'd be it. Aiden Hill. That's the easy one. They have a goalie that doesn't play for them that makes $6 million.
Yeah. 803-0550. Elliot Friedman also saying offer sheets. Paul's not alone to say, like, I'll believe offer sheets when they happen. It's a matter of time before it becomes common. It should have been common 10 years ago. Course, like, and who was the most recent one? Was there one last
offseason?
The most
recent was the small, there were a couple small ones between Edmonton and St. Louis,
right?
Which was like second round pick compensation that
Dylan Holloway and Philip Broberg,
yeah, and they got that done. St. Louis got both, they both signed and they both,
yeah, between
came to them.
Here's your number between 2013 and 2019, there were none,
yeah.
And then since 2019, 2021, and then two in 2024. So
yeah,
a slight bubbling up, but again, like no consistent
yeah
run of offer sheets. It's worth mentioning the last three that have been signed have not been matched. The player left.
Mm-hmm.
That's Scott Kotkaniemi, that's Broberg, and Holloway.
Okay, yeah.
So three straight that have not been matched after a stretch of one, two, three, four, five, six in a row that were matched on David Backes, Steve Bernier.
Long time.
Nicholas Chalmerson, Shea Weber, Ryan O'Reilly, and Sebastian Aho. Those were all matched.
Oh, the Ryan O'Reilly one is my favorite NHL story ever because it was so close to the funniest thing that could have ever happened. You remember what the deal was there?
There was something like
he had played in the KHL at the beginning of that season while he was unsigned. So I think it might have been during the year that the Flames and their GM, Jay Feaster, they offer sheet O'Reilly for a compensation that I think would have cost them. It was the two first-round pick. It was two firsts, a second, and a third, I think was what they would have cost
them. It was 2 years, $10 million.
And they didn't know there was a rule, or they didn't realize the rule, that if a player's played in another league after the season's begun, he's subject to waivers when he signs with a new team. Nabokov had this happen to him once. I remember when he came back and he refused to go somewhere. And the Flames didn't know this. So basically, if the Avalanche saved their butts, because if the Avalanche had taken the compensation
and matched it, he would have gone through waivers?
He would have had to go through waivers and he would have got claimed.
Wow.
And Calgary would have had to lose a first, two firsts, a second, and a third for nothing.
That's funny.
We were so close to that happening.
The Shea Weber offer sheet is famously funny also. Not like that level of story.
Yeah.
Do you know the term and the money on that?
No, but I remember the Predators owner had to go get a bank loan to give him the signing bonus.
It was 14 years, $110 million.
Yeah.
A 14-year offer sheet. Flyers.
Is insane.
It is kind of funny that you see one a year here and there. Here's a team just casually rolling out a 14-year offer sheet.
Right.
And then we got one in the next 7 years offer sheets.
So, right.
They happen in the NBA regularly, right?
They happen in the NFL regularly.
The Bills got
Charles Clay. I know it's a long time
ago. It's not even big news. Yeah.
Yeah, no, not at all. Didn't that happen to the Bills this offseason? Was that last off? What was Ryan Bates?
Ryan Vandermark,
excuse me. I mean, it's a small level offer sheet, but wasn't he signed to an offer sheet?
I think that might be right. The Jaguars had an offer sheet to Jake Bobo in this March.
Yeah.
And just they matched it. The Seahawks did.
Oh, and do the GMs get – they hate each other because of it?
Right.
They get really mad?
Hockey's catching up.
Part of the hope that some of the big insiders have been talking up – the offer sheet potential for is that you have a newer breed of GM, younger guys that come from different backgrounds. Not everybody's just a former player. Like the New Jersey GM is a analytics background. You got guys like that. And that could create an environment where you get more of them. I mean, I'm hopeful. I'm kind of with Paul that I believe it when I see it, but I see reasons why that you could actually get more of them than you've had in the past. I think that's my favorite point that's made, is these are not the GMs that you were used to 15 years ago, some of which didn't know the rules. Now you've got sharper guys that are competitive and would want to do it. If a team is in your division, like the Ottawa part of it, I don't think Benson will get there. I don't think the Sabres would at all let him go. But why would Ottawa not do it?
I have no idea.
From their perspective, it's July 1st and Benson hasn't signed yet. Why would you not go to Zach Benson and offer him a massive contract? He might tell you no. I don't want to create any waves. I'm good. But if I'm Ottawa, why would I never put a division rival in a spot like that? I would want to do it every year.
Which Buffalo Sabre is listed at this piece of dailyfaceoff.com as an offer sheet candidate that's not Zach Benson?
Krebs, I bet.
Yes.
Yeah.
He kind of uses some deductive reasoning. He writes, let's use deductive reasoning. The idea Krebs, he's a player, and you could probably get him, and you could probably push the Sabres to a number they wouldn't match.
And he's a little down on the priority list for them.
Yep.
Yeah, because, right, if I'm another team with cap space and I want to sign Krebs $4.5 million a year, the Sabres matching that, I might think they might not.
Nick Mendola on the other side on Team USA's win over Australia, and they've won the group, so how does it look going forward? We'll talk about it with him, get his thoughts also. He covered Brazil-Haiti, that game from Philadelphia, so we'll check in with Nick as he's our World Cup correspondent. It's coming up next here on WGR.
All right, it will only be in this context you'll ever hear me say this. I really hope nothing happens over the next couple of minutes. Twitter's down.
Of course it
it's,
is.
It's so I hope nothing happens in the NHL. We won't be able to see it, at least for, again, the next couple of minutes.
Of course it is.
It's not the red ring of death like from the Xboxes, but it's the blue circle just going around, and it's like, oh, you want to retry?
Yeah, you know what? Really appreciate what you do for the website there, Elon. Great stuff. We're cooking on a Monday where it's raining and everything like that. Vibes questionable here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones, thanks for hanging out with us here. It might be gloomy outside. It might even be gloomy around the Atlantic Division because, you know, apparently all Team USA players want to go to the same three teams.
That's the part for me. I don't even want to get like that mad about it. I made a joke yestterday that, you know, the list that Brady Tkachuk seemingly had was for people that think mayo is spicy. Like there was no fun there. Like it was, yeah, okay, it's Vegas, it's Florida. Minnesota has now entered that equation, but it seems to be purely because the GM was the GM of Team USA, and there's a bunch of American Olympians on that roster, and Kirill Kaprizov. And then Carolina, who just so happened to win the cup and is an American franchise. That does, of course, make it very, very easy. It is just kind of getting tiring that like every American player, like it. There were rumors after the Olympics that there's a group chat with the USA players that all want to play together. They are not helping themselves when the list comes out and it's the same places. It's not one, so it's not like definitively like, guys, they're all good. It's
not
illusion.
Actively collusion or tampering, but it is the same three, and like you pepper in a fourth one in case you find, you know, a condiment other than mayo that's spicy.
Like ketchup. It is very frustrating. I mean, I said this with Buffalo and Montreal, though, that I thought there was an arms race potentially brewing between those two clubs. Both are young. Both have a lot of young talent coming up at the same time and are they're about on the same trajectory. Montreal's a year earlier than Buffalo. They were able to make the Noah Dobson move last year at the draft. Now Buffalo has sort of joined the party. But then Florida goes and does that. And now while, yes, Florida, as we sit, does not have a goalie on their roster – that is a very talented team that dealt with a lot of injuries last year. Something that, by the way, could ultimately be a boom for them because now it's – I mean, we talk about this all the time with cup teams is that eventually you just play too much hockey.
Right.
Eventually that bill comes due and you got to rest up or you got to take your lean years to get back. That's what this may have ultimately been for them. This year was their lean year and now they're jumping right back into the fight. And at least with – I've been saying this the last couple of weeks. It's not that I'm in favor of bringing back Alex Tuch to a potentially exorbitant price. But it is more the perception around the team might be or is trending towards being, good job. You made the playoffs. You won a division. You won a round.
People still don't want to go here.
And ultimately, the big thing that might happen is – you lost a 30-plus goal scorer to free agency.
Yeah, the perception goes, people still don't want to be here. By the way, Florida's back. And it just – I don't know what to do anymore. I also want to very snarkily thank Jason Bottrell because he trades a first and a second for Mackie Samuskevich, which then empowers the Panthers to acquire Brady Tkachuk because they get an extra first-round pick and a second-round pick in there. Part of the price tag is three first-round picks, two of them this year, one of them being the one that Seattle traded, which wasn't their own. It was Tampa's. But alas, they still do that. But yeah, you mentioned the group chat though, the Team USA group chat.
There is that rumbling there, that rumor that a bunch of people want to play together.
There's going to become a documentary about that thing, right? Like there has to be. There's going to be something that goes down in the annals of legend about all these guys that just wanted to go and play on the same teams as each other and, you know, just hang out and vibe. And
I'm a little frustrated they're not moving like Netflix does. Netflix gets those documentaries while the case is still going on.
Yes.
They start filming before we're even at a verdict. 30 for 30? Maybe they're taking a little bit of their time.
Yes.
I would argue.
I only say that just so that, like, you know.
Well, no, I think we will get a documentary. They won the first gold medal for Team USA since the 80s. I mean, like, they were going to get one anyways. You beat Canada. You did it in overtime. It was going to happen. Now you have the whole thing of, like, the after. We're now in the epilogue of that. But it's a bunch of guys wanting to go play together. And it seemingly isn't even necessarily like the NBA's ring-chasing movement. And that kind of came around from the Celtics.
Yes.
They go and get Kevin Garnett, and then LeBron James kind of reacts to that by going down to Miami, and then you also have Golden State operating like that, following their series with OKC, and then eventually losing to Cleveland. They kind of react, and it's a super team era, right? You know, now we've entered the era of parity in the NBA. I think we've gone like seven or eight seasons.
It's eight straight seasons with a different champion.
And so some will argue that's a lot more fun. Others will argue, I kind of need my dynasties. I need people that are going to add to the lore and to the history of the league rather than just a run here of teams straight. And I kind of fall with both. I think both are fair arguments. Absolutely.
You've even on this show with me, like you've done that a couple times, like putting up the argument of the villains.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, villain bad, bad villain, get rid of villain. And I'm like, the NBA is actually kind of fun with this because you don't know. You actually have all the fan bases kind of looking at each other and going, legitimately, hey, could this be our year? Except for like Washington.
There's like, right. Like
they even get the number one overall pick though. Like good for you.
Finally happens for them.
Yeah. It just, and yet now this is something different though. You mentioned it. It's not ring chasing necessarily, but it's another sign of how, and I wonder how much I want to say about this, about like hockey culture and how exclusive it sometimes can be. Because, yeah, it's so exclusive, Mike Babcock gets another job.
Right, even after there were the findings from that investigation were, it's not great.
It's not great, but I guess we're good.
But that was the thing is, we can't ban him for this.
Yeah,
but it's not good.
The NHL effectively goes, legally we can't do anything, so I guess it's all yours, Edmonton.
Like, they sort of gave Edmonton as many outs as they wanted.
And Edmonton's like, nope, we're going to do it.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a snake eating its own foot. Like that's the circle that the NHL is in. And look, the best part about the sport is the best part to have about your sport. It's the actual on-field, on-ice, on-court product.
Right.
The game of hockey is wildly entertaining to watch. Most even acknowledge, even those that don't watch the sport, that playoff hockey is the best playoffs.
Yes.
That it's the most entertaining. But we're like, my issue is I can understand the ring chasing in the NBA. We had built up, I'm saying we as just sports consumers, the media, ESPN, all of that, really built up the ring chasing culture. I had brought this up last week when talking about, you know, Jordan, LeBron, and actually it was 2 weeks ago now, Wemby. You know, for whatever reason, he was now being demonized because he had made it to the finals, where it almost seems like it'd be better if he had lost in the first round of Portland than make it all the way to the finals. Like, it does seem like people want to forget the early parts of Jordan's career when talking about Jordan the athlete, where, you know, hey guys, he was kind of getting run over by the Pistons for like a good chunk of the early parts of his career. It's a huge moment for him when he overcomes them. It's symbolic of the Pistons leaving the court early and Jordan had finally gotten over them, and then we get into the rings. And it was the same with LeBron. LeBron gets to a final very, very early in his career, but loses, and now all of a sudden he can't be touched, or he can't touch Jordan.
As a matter of fact, it's Boston that is kind of getting in their way.
Exactly right. And so that, again, leads to we've overbuilt ring culture. Now guys are going to go chase it because if they don't have it, all of a sudden their legacy is crap. Mm-hmm. The NHL doesn't really have that yet. No one's looking at Dylan Larkin going, oh, man, what's your legacy now? You haven't won a ring?
Yeah, no.
He's not necessarily that good of a player. Brady Tkachuk is sort of the same thing. Not really even that good. Hockey is not really built on that kind of culture.
Hang on. You did kind of do it a little bit there. Like, Dylan Larkin and Brady Tkachuk are very good players. They're U.S. Olympians, as a matter of fact. And situation dictated proper, you know, they would be the best players on their team. And yet, what's getting in their way all of a sudden? Themselves? Question mark? I mean, I've got Larkin captaining a team that constantly collapses every April. And with Brady Tkachuk, he kind of doesn't do all the right things as a leader. Like, as a player, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
As a leader, he's not. And it's, you know, taking ridiculous penalties. Logan Stanley looking at him funny, and he drops the gloves with him, and it takes him out of the contest right away. Yeah, I know Ottawa ultimately won that game, but I'm using examples. But, like, you could bait him into bad penalties. Tries to fight Jordan Staal while on the road to set the tone?
Yeah.
I don't care if he didn't win the fight or not. You're just going to get their fans loud when you drop the gloves right away because you're on the road. It just, sometimes you look at Brady Tkachuk and go, man, what's going on upstairs, buddy? So you did kind of dismiss them a little bit here. So I don't know if the legacy thing is that big of a deal, but, you know,
But there's no one in the league that's being, hey, what are we talking about with their career if they don't have a championship,
right,
other than McDavid? He's the only one.
McDavid's the only one.
And we talk about it more because Edmonton sucks. It's more of a...
He's become a tragic figure.
Man, like, what is going on? Like they just do everything, it seems, poorly. He's dragging them. No one else is really hamstrung by that. And yet, NHL players seem to be operating like NBA players did in the early 2010s now, where they all want to go play together. There's only a select few of you that are really invited to the club, and you're seeing it in the trade lists of places they want to go.
Vegas, Florida, Minnesota.
And I do want to acknowledge, too, I feel bad for Canadian teams. It seems like it is a real detriment. If you have a top five pick and one of those players is an American, you should probably avoid that player.
Yeah.
Because it's starting to become a trend where these guys, Matthews, it feels like, is only a year away, maybe. Same with Matthew Nyes. He's also American. Grew up in Arizona. He's fun enough, of the Austin Matthews ilk of hockey growing in Arizona. It feels like we're only a stone throw away from those two potentially leaving.
Right. That Matthews was kind of the question mark heading into the offseason, right? It's the one we don't know about. Because, you know, we've got rumblings about Hellebuck. We got, you know, the report on Larkin. Brady Tkachuk gets moved almost all of a sudden, by the way.
And on that, too, and I think it's right to bring up all of a sudden, he has 2 years left on his deal. Ottawa, it depends on the reporting, because we've heard the rumblings there. And, you know, now everything comes out because he's no longer in Ottawa. The teammates weren't really clamoring for him to come back. The locker room had gotten weird after the Four Nations and the Olympics and whatever. But they had 2 years left on his deal. They arguably have all of the leverage of, no, you'll stay here and play, or you'll give us more teams. Because all they get back is futures. Yes, it's three firsts and second. But a team like Ottawa, who had just made the playoffs 2 years in a row and were trying to push further up, okay, well now, why don't they just reset?
It's also so uneven, that package they get back. There's three first-round picks in there. Two of them are right now. Literally this Friday.
Draft. Yeah.
Two of them are Friday. The other's four drafts from now.
Yeah, so it's a bad return for a player I have major issues with, but still a very talented player. And one that makes Florida that much more dangerous. It's just, I know people talked about this with the Eichel stuff too. If you didn't actually have to trade him, you could have fought a little bit harder, right? It's the same with really all these guys.
Yeah.
You can kind of put your foot down a little bit, but it feels like the league is in a weird spot where ultimately, and we're saying this as Buffalo fans, and I know there's going to be a bit of a bias there, but a division-winning, playoff series-winning team can't get anyone to come here? Really?
Mm-hmm.
They can't convince anyone that, hey, actually the grass is in fact greener now? Because they're not Florida, they're not Vegas, they're not Tampa. I mean, that puts your league in a really, really bad spot. It is good every now and then to have dynasties, right? Florida arguably is part of that. Vegas, three cup finals in 9 years. They're one of the premier organizations in the sport. But when you do get to a point where half of your clubs aren't participating really, you have an issue. The NBA has been there for a long time. It's coming out of it, but I've said with the lottery, I think it's killed Washington, Charlotte, Utah, like they've had to get lucky in these drafts rather than just, hey, we're bad, we get the first or second overall pick. We can kind of start allocating those resources. San Antonio builds a finals team off of three top five picks, a thing you can now no longer do based off the new NBA draft lottery rules. You can no longer have three top five picks in a row. You can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's their entire core. I mean, hell, De'Aaron Fox is technically part of the core. He's one of the reasons they lose the title. It's not the young guys. I just, it's funny. The NFL, I think, almost does everything right because they don't overthink things. We're not going to have a draft lottery. Our draft is random. It's based completely, almost entirely off of quarterbacks. Jets and Cleveland have built good rosters in the last couple of years. They don't have a quarterback, doesn't work. Hockey and basketball, though, it does take one player to realistically kind of turn the idea of your franchise around. Basketball more so than any, but even hockey. You get one guy on there, it can change the perception. It can really push you to another level.
It can change the perception. Sometimes it doesn't change the on-ice impact right away, though.
No, not right away.
And, I mean, for the Sabres, it took a lot longer than it should have for a player like Rasmus Dahlin to finally sniff the playoffs. That has more to do with an organizational failure, but it also kind of limits the true impact one player might have. And yet, with all of this that happened, right, with the Team USA players, Zach, by the growing days, I guess I continue to be thankful, impressed, maybe even a little confused that Tage Thompson, the fact that it is told to us that he and Dahlin sat down together and they want to be the difference. They want to be the change. And that tells me Tage Thompson's not trying to flee to Florida, Vegas, or Minnesota. And you know what? Minnesota's kind of the big thing here. Minnesota's kind of your tattletale card.
I agree.
Because Vegas and Florida, at the very least, I can go ahead and say, like, yeah, those are warm weather places with, you know, not a lot to do with any state taxes or none. And, you know, like, there's enough commonality in there where you can see those two and it's like, yeah, it's fair. They're consistent winners. Like,
right, destination spots, winners, the tax breaks, yeah.
Minnesota's where they all tell on themselves. Because if I ask people, where would you rather want to stay for, say, 5 years of your career? Las Vegas or St. Paul, Minnesota? And nothing against St. Paul, Minnesota, but we have a similar climate here. As a matter of fact, yours might be a little more harsh.
Yeah, I don't really know if we have ice fishing here. Minnesota's big on ice fishing.
We do, but like,
not to that extent.
It's not big. You're correct. But that's where they all tell themselves. Team USA's general manager. Faber is there. Boldy is there. Quinn Hughes is now there.
Right now, Quinn Hughes is there.
And even that might be a question mark in and of itself. What happens with Quinn Hughes? What happens with Jack Hughes in New Jersey? But it is just like Minnesota. And again, nothing against Minnesota. I like the Wild. I want the Wild to keep succeeding. Especially because that fan base does deserve it too. Not like we don't. But it's kind of where those U.S. players tell on themselves.
Well, because Minnesota was a team that had just won
won their first series in, I think, a decade.
10 years. 10 years.
And
everyone is flocking there or wants to flock there. Because it's Team USA's GM and a bunch of Team USA players.
There's three players from that roster there. And just...
You don't even mention Kaprizov.
Yeah.
Kaprizov, who... What does he make? $17 million? Something ridiculous?
Who is supposed to be your main draw, by the way. And he's not.
And he's not really because, what anyone is bringing up with them.
Because the players that are bringing up Minnesota are players that played with those guys.
He does make $17 million a year. That is crazy.
Yep. So, we're going to see contracts getting a little interesting and insane here. But I also wonder if all of this with this U.S. players asking for the same three destinations, Zach, I wonder if it's going to walk us to another lockout.
Because eventually owners and GMs are just going to be, we can't keep handing out these no-trade clauses only for our players to eventually want out and to the same teams. Again, Ottawa's return is futures, and that's it.
Yeah, there's no NHL player on there.
Big college basketball news here real quick. This is coming down. Twitter's back, so I got this, and ESPN's showing it at the same time.
Oh!
Michigan looking for a new head basketball coach as the Dallas Mavericks are hiring Dusty May to become their next head coach. So that is the first big news for basketball. It also sounds like we're going to get a Giannis Antetokounmpo trade at some point, either today or tomorrow before the start of the draft. But in terms of Michigan, one of the better NIL powers, and this is relatively late now into the offseason.
Tweeted it?
He's getting it from Shams.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it says, according to Shams, Pete Thamel, and Schefter.
The Schefter one's weird. Pete Thamel, Shams, makes total sense to me. Schefter, a little weird.
Yeah. What's a polar bear doing in Texas?
Is he a Michigan grad?
Who, Schefter?
I can't remember who Schefter is. Oh, there you go. There it is.
Yeah, but like...
It's all I needed. He probably has Dusty's phone number.
They showed the tweet from Schefter of all of them, funny enough. And like at the end, it's kind of like the peak Schefter kind of tweet. The allure of coaching Cooper Flagg lured him in. And it's like, yeah, that's an Adam Schefter tweet, all right.
That's an Adam Schefter tweet, baby. It's not the money and not having to recruit.
Nope, there's something there.
It's only Cooper Flagg.
It's something.
Who is, it should be noted, is very, very good.
But yes, yeah. But like that just sounded like a Schefter tweet.
I just wanted to get that before we forgot. But on the NHL notes, I think you might be onto something with that potential lockout. Eventually, GMs and owners, because you handed, many of them did, not all, because Yarmo's not one of these guys, but many of them have, handed out these no trade clauses like candy to parade. It has very much stalled movement in the league oftentimes, and now is putting a lot of these teams in bad spots when players do want out, that they're only willing to move to three or four teams. And it looks like Ottawa's return yesterday. They ultimately get nothing for a guy in the prime of his career on a relatively solid contract as well. It's all futures. Two of them are this year, but what did you say? One of them's 4 years from now, 3 years from now?
Four drafts from now, 3 years from now.
That's terrible. And if I'm an Ottawa fan, you start to wonder, well, should we just start over then?
Right.
Because we're not getting anything for a guy that's been one of our premier players. Head case, but one of your premier players, and all you get is futures. Look at how the NFL does their moves. I mean, we've had fans talk about trading for Myles Garrett, give him 3 first-round picks. That's not what those guys are moving for. You had to offer picks and a premium asset of your own. Jared Verse going this year for Myles Garrett. He had defensive tackle last year for Micah Parsons, plus the picks. And that's kind of always how it's been done in hockey. There's always been that sort of give and take. Florida doesn't just get Matthew Tkachuk because they give up a ton of picks. You have to also move off of Jonathan Huberdeau. It works out brilliantly, but at the time it was, that's a 100-point scorer that's leaving. Tkachuk better work.
And Mackenzie Weir is also heading back that way. It is really tragic for Calgary that neither of them really pan out. Weir kind of stays a little bit the same, but he's like, you know, it's a really high cap hit. It's a heavy cap hit, but Huberdeau falls off a cliff in production. Almost immediately, and becomes an albatross. But Zach, like, the lockout thing really is interesting to me in a way, because the amount of teams that hand out, you know, no move clauses or no trade clauses, like, they're candy. And you get extreme versions of both of them, though, on like terms of success. Do you know how many no trade or no move clauses that the Stanley Cup champion Carolina Hurricanes have?
Is it just the one?
14.
Oh.
I've included no trade clauses in this.
Oh, okay.
There's a reason for this. Full no moves, that answer is 3.
Okay.
One of them's Taylor Hall. Which, I mean, good on you, kid. But then you look at a team that finished farther down in the standings. New Jersey, 13. And it is too commonplace now that it is hard for teams to get business done, including, but not limited to, the 7 teams above the border in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffalo, being close enough to it, has had their problems. Their biggest problem, though, was, you know, 14 seasons worth of ineptitude.
It was that, but I mean... And we got to take a break here real quick. I do want to point this out, or at least mention it. it also kind of puts bad teams in a situation where you're kind of constantly bad. I said this last year, that if this group didn't get it done, they would have to start over and do the same thing again.
Right.
Young players hoping draft picks hit and build it all together and kind of alone as like a hermit kingdom almost, because no one will willingly go to Buffalo unless it's no move clauses. These young players that ultimately, because you can bring up Matthew Nyes, does Toronto actually want to move Nyes? No. They're willing to for a major haul. It's that they can. It's not that they necessarily want to. So it puts some of these bad teams in really tough spots. I look at a team like a Calgary. They've got a ridiculous amount of draft picks. But that's sort of how they have to build.
It is.
They kind of have they to, can't to get move. Back that way.
They can't move all of them for a player right now because all the ones with no trade clauses are – how many of them want to go to Western Canada?
Yep.
It's a tough thing. It's a tough sell sometimes, especially with – again, I'm seeing all the top players saying they want to play for the same three teams.
Yeah.
If they all want to flock there, well, so do I.
Right. You're going to get very few guys. I mean, you're giving Tage a lot of credit. Very few guys are going to want to be the outlier.
And kind of hang out on their own. If Buffalo didn't get it done this year, how much you want to bet that that group chat includes recruiting Tage Thompson? But yeah, they do get it done. And I do respect, though, the fact that Thompson, it is publicly told by Darlene that him and Thompson would get into it with each other, trying to focus, wanting to make things right, wanting to be the answer, being the desire to change Buffalo's history.
I just do wonder what would have happened if they don't get it done and they win the gold medal. Because that does seem to be the moment for a lot of them if they won the gold and now they all want to hang out together. 803-0550, the number to call. With the Brady Tkachuk trade yesterday, Florida Panthers have made their move at the start of this offseason. It's almost weird when we don't get a move in the NHL, at least one a day. Sabres got the Byram talk. Benson, we're still sort of waiting on that official announcement as well for his contract. It's the week of the draft on Friday. See if they can do anything. We also got the World Cup as well to talk about, as the U.S. did clinch their spot into the knockout stage. We'll go through some of the opponents that they could potentially play in that first knockout game. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, this is WGR.